and welcome to this week's edition of the Daily Record Rangers podcast. My name's Gavin Berry, and I'm delighted to say I'm once again joined by the Sunday Mail's chief football writer, Scott McDermott, and Record Sports, Fraser Wilson. How are you both, guys?
Very well,
good, Gav.
Good. Well, let's start. Commandant 1, Rangers 2, Scott maintained Rangers' two-point lead at the top of the table. Let's rewind to Rangers hitting top spot for the first time when they went to McDermott Park and won. The test came after that. You looked at the fixtures, third place and in-form Hearts at home, away to fourth place Kilmarnock. Always a tricky game. Lost their first game of the season. 1-0 down at half-time, and everything that goes with Kilmarnock. Phil Clement spoke about the dangers of it before the game, and they come back down the M77 with 3 points. So just start with that. How big has the test, overcoming this mentality test, how big has it been, and how big is that result alone?
I think it's massive, Gav, because you're right. People did look at the fixtures, and I think the general consensus was that once they'd hit the top of the league, if they could overcome those two obstacles, two really tricky games against two in-form teams, I think most people felt Rangers had been in a really good position to go and, you know, really make a charge for this title. They blew Hearts away, obviously, at Ibrox. It was very comfortable for them, arguably the best performance we've seen since Clement has come in. And then it was on to Rugby Park, where it was always going to be so difficult. A major challenge for them, physically and mentally, because we know how physical a team Killy can be, especially in their own patch. So Rangers had to come through that, and obviously by half-time, well, there were serious question marks. It was a poor performance, they're a goal down. Clement has to make a couple of changes. So it was all about how they were going to respond. And also, bear in mind, people at Rugby Park would know the score at Celtic Park at halftime, where they're 6 up against Dundee. So that can feed into the psyche as well. So they had to respond. And listen, it might have only been for a 15-20 minute spell in the second half, but they did respond. Tavernier comes up with a big moment again. I don't know how many times we've said that about him. Lawrence scores a brilliant goal. And even towards the end, when Killy, obviously, they throw guys on for the bench, Greg Stewart, Kevin Van Veen, and put a bit of pressure on. Even that was a kind of mental test for Rangers just to get through that last spell. So, massive win for them. I don't think you can underplay that. I think on the other side of the city, with them winning so handsomely against Dundee, but still not being able to take advantage and go top again, I think that's crucial psychologically as well. And as I say, it just puts Rangers in a good position again. 2 points clear, a goal ahead, going into a home game on Saturday against Motherwell, who are in the bottom six. You would expect them to go and do the job, despite the kind of injuries piling up. And obviously Celtic need to go to Tynecastle on Sunday, which is going to be difficult, especially if Rangers are 5 clear, because that then becomes a big mental test for them as well.
As it was at Motherwell on Sunday, Fraser, Celtic eventually come through it with the kind of late goals, but Scott's right, they need to put the pressure on. And he was talking about the psychology of it all there, Scott. I mean, Fraser, what do you think? What impact would that have had on Celtic as a whole? When you're winning like that, and you're fans will be checking phones, and Rangers are losing. The difference between going from, thumping Dundee and Rangers dropping points, and thumping Dundee but Rangers winning in the manner they did. What kind of impact does that then have on Celtic as a whole, do you think?
It'd been a bit of a blow to the gut, to be honest. Both of them have gone out and made statements in very different ways last night, haven't they? Celtic have blown away Dundee in front of their own fans. And that, by the way, I fully expected them to. No doubt, Celtic have had their troubles of late. But I just had a feeling they were going to roll over Dundee last night, and that's how it turned out. Rangers, however, had, I think what we have agreed, is possibly the hardest game outside an Old Firm game that you can get in the Scottish Premiership. That's been borne out by results this season, where Celtic have lost twice at Rugby Park, and Rangers obviously lost that opening game of the season. Just Kilmarnock know how to master that pitch of theirs against the big teams. And it started looking that way again last night. And at half-time, the Celtic fans must have been high as kites, thinking they'd overturned Rangers' lead. And it was set to maybe steamroll their way to another title. But mentality-wise, as you say, what a statement for Rangers. Two substitutes at half-time, crucial for Clement. I'm sure they delivered a half-time team talk that was calm and composed, but with the authority that he carries. Mm-hmm. And to come out, Jack Butland makes a key save at 1-0, because it's a completely different game if it goes 2-0. I think we all agree that.
Yeah.
And then James Tavernier of Scots comes up, does what it does best. And even better than that, I thought, was Tom Lawrence's speed of mind to bounce up for the foul, take it free quick, kick so quickly.
Yep.
And the end of the loose ball to bury it. I just thought that is a sign of champions to me, the way they came back and won that extremely difficult game. And that game, for me, was bigger, was always going to be more of a statement win than beating Hearts at Ibrox.
Yeah.
Beating Hearts are the third best team in the country at the moment.
The other thing is, if Rangers hadn't won last night, though, I think there would have been no serious accusations, but I think probably for the first time, people might have questioned Clement's team selection going to Rugby Park, because I think when the team lines came out, everybody knows that you're going to be in for a battle at Killie. And I think it was a surprise that Dujon Sterling wasn't playing. I think it was a surprise that Dessers didn't start up front ahead of Silva. I think it was also a surprise that Yilmaz didn't start at left back, in terms of dealing with Danny Armstrong as one of Kelly's main threats. I think he would have dealt with Armstrong far better than what Barisic did, and obviously that change was made at half-time. When Sterling came on after an hour, I thought he made a difference as well, just with his power and his physique and his athleticism. So, listen, they got through it and they deserve massive credit for that, including the manager, because he made those changes at half time. But that's how kind of precarious it is. At half time, I think Rangers fans, as I say, probably for the first time would have been questioning that team selection. And listen, maybe Clement for the first time maybe did get it wrong. We starting 11, but I haven't said that too often. But it was rectified, they responded in the right manner in the second half, and obviously they got the job done.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that, Scott. I mean, in Philip Clement's defence, certainly in terms of the Sterling one, I think he did explain it before the game by saying that Sterling has had issues before.
Yeah.
With the pop in his ankle and things like that. No, you're not taking that as a valid.
Listen, of course. I mean, you need to take him at face value. But I mean, he came on after an hour and seemed to cope fine. I mean, I think I'm right in saying he came on and literally first time he got the ball, He was fouled by Ndaba, and he got Rangers a free kick. Just things like that, that kind of contrast between him and McCausland, completely different types of player. You just felt Sterling. I think Sterling's a terrific player, and I think he'll probably start most games between now and the end of the season. I think he's becoming a really crucial player, but especially going to Killie, knowing the type of game it was. And listen, you're not telling Philip Clement anything he wouldn't have already known. He's got Alec Ray in there, he's got Brian Gilmer, he's got people that know exactly what type of game it was. But as I say, with the one down at half time, given the way they played, I just think there would have been questions asked. But listen, it doesn't matter now. They get the job done. They get 3 points.
I was going to say, do you think they would have won that game 6 months ago if they'd been in the same position? And I thought, no, they were the same position 6 months ago and they never won it. Of course, in the opening day. So we already know the answer to that one. But you see the reaction. We spoke before, Scott, about the Aberdeen game at home. That one when they had the chance to go top but didn't quite. But, getting the win and how it was, the celebration was almost like a European game. But you see it in the celebrations, don't you, after the game? I don't know if you're just watching the players. you can just see that sort of spirit and how much it means. Yeah. You can tell the game.
Yeah, the fans can feel it. No, it's Clermont talks every week about that synergy, getting that synergy back between the fans and the players. That's there, and the fans can just smell it now. They can smell that they're onto something good with Clermont, and they've got a real chance of winning a title, which, let's be honest, you know, we all felt they were out of, especially after losing the Old Firm game at the end of December. So fans have got the bit between their teeth. The players have clearly got the bit between their teeth. They think they're onto something good. Clermont, you know, clearly is instilling that belief that he's got. No, having been a title winner elsewhere, he said last week, I can't remember his exact quote, but basically said, I know what to do to win titles. So the fans have bought into that, and they genuinely believe, you know, they're going to be holding that trophy off. The only thing, and I touched on it earlier, injuries might be mounting up a wee bit for Rangers, and it's going to be, I hope that doesn't kind of derail them. I mean, Clermont did brilliantly in the last couple of months, rotating the squad around. You know, looking at the game on Saturday, because you'll correct me if I'm wrong, I think he's picked up another couple of injuries last night, Cortez,
yeah.
Is it Lawrence, maybe the other one? I don't know.
No, I think Lawrence was okay.
Yeah, but even with Cortez missing, he's already missing Seema, Cantwell.
Yeah, but I thought the flip side is they're coming back. You know, Seema's edging back and... You know, I thought some of them, okay, we might be talking the end of March or the beginning. You know, Ruth will be available again. I know you don't know how much you can bank on him, but I mean, some of these guys are coming back.
I suppose I just think, I actually think Rangers' injuries have been a wee bit underplayed this season. No, I look at Celtic and a lot of noise comes out of Celtic about the players they've been missing, Carter Vickers and Hattie, and I don't think much has been made of the fact Rangers have actually missed big players at different times this season as well. But you're right, listen, obviously Celtic are getting a couple back now, especially Carter Vickers, and hopefully for Rangers, as you say, Roof coming back, Seema, Cantwell, Danilo. I mean, you're forgetting about all these guys that are missing. So hopefully we can get them back so that they can at least play a part and contribute before the end of the season.
Fraser, we only get you on to talk about goalkeeper stuff because you're a resident goalkeeping expert. Is that right? Just tell us why you're a goalkeeper throughout your school days. Yeah,
school days. When were they?
Century. But it's funny, no, you
Before goalie gloves were invented, aye. Yeah.
Top junior keeper, you're talking to
yourself. Yeah, no, that's what I was going to say. He's far too modest, Fraser. You're far too modest. Right. Anyway, for anybody listening, he was a top goalkeeper at a level.
Just you're in for a serious disappointment.
But you mentioned the Butland save, and you're right. I'm actually just watching it here as we're talking, and I read earlier on social media. I mean, I don't know how they work these things out, but apparently 88 times out of 100, when that ball left Matty Kennedy's boot, it should have ended up in a goal 88 times out of 100. So I don't know how they work that out, but let's see what works for them.
He's turning into a hipster. Honestly, one of these online hipsters.
Oh my God. Well, make that 100 times if I'd been a next, put it that way.
Good job. But listen, look, it should have been a goal, shouldn't it?
Aye, but there's not an awful lot more Matty Kennedy can do. I mean, the thing I like about it, Butland's eye could have been distracted by Goldson and I think it was Marley Watkins who went towards the low cross for Vassell. And I'm expecting one of those to maybe get a touch on it. But he's kept himself light in his feet and managed to get across to Matty Kennedy's shot, which is going right in the bottom corner, isn't it? So yeah. It's a great length that he gets in his dive and crucial save because if, as I say, the Rangers go 2-0 down at that point.
It's over.
I don't know. Tavernier maybe still scores the free kick and they come back to draw. Kilmarnock would make changes at that point if they go 2-0 up that you would expect would maybe see the game out. So that is every bit as important as any goal. It's huge. And do you know what? There was also a moment, was it before or after that, where Diamande gets in all sorts of trouble and plays a horrifically short pass back. And Butland's got the speed of mind to come off his line and just beat, I think it was Liam Donnelly, to the through ball. He's a good 30 yards.
Oh, I know, yeah, that's right. That was the incident where Kamamet was screaming for a red card for Diamande because...
Right, he did get lucky. He took Donnelly back and the split second that Butland gets there, I mean, Diamande's pullback on Donnelly makes up that split second. So, Kelly have definitely got a point. Butland was huge again. The guy just exudes class, doesn't he? On the park and off it. Yeah. How he only played 17 games in the last 3 years is beyond me.
But it looks as if he could be in line for this England recall. I know it's been talked about. Andy Newport, regular on here, had an exclusive interview with the England goalkeeping coach. They were monitoring him. Gareth Southgate then followed that up. But it looks as if he's in for a real shout with this. They've got a couple of friendlies coming up, haven't they? Belgium and Brazil, which Brazil would be a real reward for him, wouldn't it?
Totally deserves it. Mm-hmm. Presence, no doubt about it. Big saves, as he keeps proving. Mm-hmm. Commands his box. He just has an aura about him. He looks like a top class goalkeeper. And look at the England is the most on form English goalkeeper at the moment. If he doesn't get in the squad for these friendlies, then it'll just prove to me that England have got a snobbery towards players playing in the Scottish Premiership. He should stroll into that, and for me, he should actually start those friendlies because he's ahead in terms of form and where everything is at the moment. He's ahead of Jordan Pickford. Aaron Ramsdale's not even playing. And then who is the third choice England goalie? Is it Sam Johnson? I mean, for me right now, Jack Butland is number one for England. It should be.
All right. Well, when we had the debate, this discussion, Scott, recently, we didn't have him above Pickford, did we? Or certainly you and Andy didn't? Or am I wrong?
No, I don't think we had him above Pickford. I think we made the point that Pickford has never really let England down. I mean, whatever you think each club form at certain points for Everton, no, with England, Pickford has been outstanding and he's been to major tournaments and done really well. So, no, would I put Jack Butland ahead of him at the moment? Probably not, but certainly, as Fraser said, he should be an absolute shoo-in for the squad. I mean, if you're picking three keepers, I mean, we rhymed them off, Nick Pope injured, Aaron Ramsdale not getting game time, Sam Johnson and Dean Henderson have just kind of switched at Crystal Palace. I think Johnson's back in, but Henderson's out.
Was there a blunder from him for Palace?
Sam Johnson?
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure. But certainly Butland, given what he's done this season, and listen, people can, you know, have a go at the Scottish game or not the standard, but listen, he's played in big games, you know, all firm games in Europe this season, and it's not as if, you know, he's like a new guy on the scene. No, as Fraser says, he's 30. I mean, Gareth Southgate knows exactly what he can do. He was in England squads when he was 19, 20, so, and he's been to major tournaments. So I genuinely would be amazed if he wasn't in Southgate's squad for these friendlies so he can have another look at him.
There's one thing, Scotty, because you're right, look, Pickford has probably deservedly held on to the England number one jersey because he hasn't let them down. I just think away from the short stopping, the things that you can see with the naked eye, I think the calmness that Jack Butland brings to the game is in complete contrast to Pickford's style that's almost it's a bit like a coiled spring at times, isn't he? That's accusation I used to get thrown at me. He's angry, he's on edge, he's always looks like he's just about to explode. And I don't always think that's good for a defence. So I would like, there are two friendlies coming up. I'd like to see Butland start at least one of them. I'd like to see him get in the squad first.
Well, listen, because they're friendlies, I think there's every chance if he gets the call-up, then he probably will play in at least one of the games. There's not really any point Southgate bringing him in.
Yeah.
He's not going to give him a chance and look at him. He knows what Pickford can do.
What can you? You're right. Sorry, Scott. What I was going to ask you there as well? You were talking about the tinkering of the team there. I mean, the big one, I know the Dessers and Silva, and we talk about Sterling, okay, you tried to kind of justify that one a bit. But surely the left-back one is the one that's the big one. I mean, Yilmaz had been playing so well. You know, yeah, there are doubts over Barisic for so long. I mean, what was he doing in the build-up before Kamalmut get the penalty that gives him a lead? Danny Armstrong was pressuring him. He just seemed to throw himself in a heap.
I know. To be fair, I mean, it was ridiculous, but he did what so many defenders do in that position. They feel the striker behind them. The slightest touch, slightest nudge, they get down. And to be honest, exactly. I mean, the refs normally fall for it, but Barisic's was so ridiculous. Oh. I mean, it was just ludicrous, and the linesman was right to give the handball. But yeah, that's what I mean with Clement's team. I mean, I think he took a gamble by putting Barisic in. I mean, he justified it by saying, you know, Barisic needed minutes, you know, needed a bit of game time. He's no long back for an injury, but I think it's clear now that Yilmaz is the guy in form. He's the first choice left back. You know, Rangers' kind of brilliant run of form has kind of coincided with Yilmaz playing most of those games. And I go back to what I say. I just think Yilmaz would have dealt with Armstrong better than Barisic. And as I say, took the gamble, it didn't work out, and he's had to change it at half-time. And obviously, Yilmaz comes on, and there's an upturn in Rangers' performance in the second half. So I'd be surprised if Barisic starts on Saturday, put it that way.
Yeah. On the penalty, so right after that, Kamalmut get the penalty. It's Armstrong again, a guy who you said on here not so long ago, Scott, Rangers should be looking at or could do a job, certainly, I think you said. So I think that was probably opinion was strengthened further with his performance last night, his ball in. Rangers get a penalty, Lundstrom handball. Philip Clement angry after the game, wanted to know why. At the very end of the game, there's another handball shout. Ball hits Lewis Mayo, Scott Wright, I think, cross. Lewis Mayo seems to extend his arm out. Handball not given. Why the double standards? But talk about those incidents specifically, but also more generally, just hours before the game yesterday, we put a story up online with the ex-referee, Steve Conroy. He was saying he fears that a VAR decision could actually decide not just the top of the Scottish Premiership, but also the bottom, because I think 24 hours earlier, we had an incident with Ross County where St Mirren should have had a penalty and didn't. How worried are you about the overall VAR thing? Do you think Lundstrom was a penalty? And what about the Mayo one?
There's a lot in that question, Gavin. Listen, but I'm not an advocate of VAR. I don't like it. I've said that right from the start. I think I've been proven right that I think it's bad for the game. But ultimately, in terms of one of these decisions having a major bearing on the title or relegation, it could have, and I'm worried about that. But it probably won't be VAR that does that. It'll be the incompetence of the referees, either the referees on the pitch or the referees at Clydesdale House. I mean, listen, we don't know what a handball is anymore. None of us know. I mean, you're asking why the double standards. I mean, that's the million-dollar question. I mean, who knows? Because one week an incident is a handball, the following week the same incident isn't a handball. They don't know, we don't know, so you're guessing now every week. I mean, the Lundstrom one last night, when I first saw it, I immediately thought, oh, he's put his arm out, it's a penalty. But when you actually watch it again, slow it down, which the VAR officials can do, obviously, his arm is tight in his body. Yeah. I mean, he's jumping the way you would want your defender to jump and try and block across. I mean, his arm only extends once the ball blasts off his arm. So I think that VAR should have intervened there and asked the referee to go and have a look. And as you say, the Mayo one late on, you know, probably kind of went a wee bit unnoticed at the time. But again, when you look at it, his arm clearly comes out, you know, and kind of affects the cross. So we've seen so many of them given this season. You're right, the Ross County one the night before. is a clear penalty. How Greg Aitken and VAR can sit and look at that, you know, multiple times and no see that his arm's in an unnatural position and it touches the ball. I genuinely don't know. But that's where we are at the moment, with referees and VAR. I was at the Hearts Hibs game last night. A ridiculous penalty decision that Kevin Clancy gives. A really soft award. VAR does its job by effectively saying, look, we believe you've made a clear and obvious error. You should come over and have a look. And lo and behold, Kevin Clancy has a look at it and still thinks it's a penalty, even though the guys have asked him. Now, we said at the start of the season, when referees were constantly changing their mind after having a second look, you know, it would be nice occasionally if they actually just stuck by their, you know, had the courage of their convictions and stuck by their decision. But that's probably the only the case if they're getting it right. And that's where I come back to the incompetence. Mm-hmm. There's now this trend, which seems from the turn of the year, there's this new trend among refs that when we go to the monitor, I'm not going to change my decision just because you've told me. I'm going to stick by it because I'll get a bit more credit for that. Clancy's done that last night, but it's clearly the wrong decision. I mean, anybody looking at that can see that's never a penalty kick.
It's actually outrageous, isn't it, when you watch
So that's what I mean. So even with VAR, even with the second look, we're still getting decisions wrong. Yeah. So that just then boils down to the ineptitude of the referees and the guys that are getting in place. And that is a worry. As I say, I don't like VAR, I'm not a fan. But I'm worried that decisions, bad decisions, almost kind of supplemented by VAR, are going to have a major impact between now and May, and really going to cost a team. I mean, it cost Hibs last night. You know, they're looking for their first derby win at Tynecastle in 4 years. You know, Nick Montgomery needs results. He's a guy under a bit of pressure, and that goes against him. A really, really poor decision. And you're talking about a club that have already had one go against him a few weeks ago, where it resulted in the SFA having to apologise for getting it wrong. So as Montgomery said last night, they're probably going to get another apology in the next couple of days, because that's never a penalty kick. So that's where we are, and it's not a good place to be.
Yeah. Okay, so let's looking forward, Fraser, we'll just wrap up. But now, looking ahead, there's two games before that big one, Celtic at Ibrox on April the 7th. So it's Motherwell at home, as Scott mentioned this week, and Dundee away is the other game, because in amongst that we have a Scottish Cup tie, away to Hibs and an international break. How important to get the 6 points from those games, Motherwell at home and Dundee away, having come through the test that we've just talked about there, to make sure they lift themselves for games that aren't on paper as tough, to get the 6 points and ensure that when Celtic come, they've got that minimum 2-point lead. Obviously, Celtic go to Tynecastle and they've got St John's to home, just to ensure they've got that 2-point cushion, knowing they get into that game saying, if we win this, it's 5 clear.
That's massive. That goes without saying. Obviously, it's huge. And don't forget, there's two Europa League ties in there as well, home and away. So it's going to be 3 weeks. Is it 3 weeks, 4 weeks? Whatever it is. It's really going to drain the mental and the physical energy. But there's just you started the podcast today talking about the mentality of that win last night. There is just a new mindset at Rangers under Philippe Clement that is pushing the players to their absolute extreme. I mean, I think this is Rangers close to full tilt now. And Motherwell have done well to push the Old Firm, both the Old Firm this season. Mm-hmm. And there won't be any pushovers on Saturday. They're coming off a good result last night themselves. Also, I don't know how many folk realise they are the highest scorers in the Premiership outside Old Firm by 3 or 4 goals as well. Clear third top scorers. So they know how to cause sides problems. But I just think Rangers, especially at home, as they proved on Saturday against Hearts, just they're in their stride. Whether they get an early goal, whether they have to wait till after half time, nothing seems to be knocking them off their stride at the moment. And I fully expect them to win both those games. They didn't have much trouble up at Dens Park earlier in the season. I think that the only problems could be the mental and physical energy sapping from the back-to-back, the Europa League games, home and away to Benfica.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, Fraser, Scott, thanks very much for your time today, and hopefully we can catch up again next week.